Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
We're back. We're back on the long distance chat.
We are indeed. It's definitely more difficult for me and for both of us, I would think. But you know what? We are dedicated to getting this stuff out.
Yeah, and we're working on trying to make sure the sound and everything is up to quality. I know that last episode it wasn't really, but
yeah,
I think just like everyone else, this whole thing happened fairly suddenly. Like that sounds weird to say because we knew it was coming, but when you really look at the timeline of it, like last week, like last Saturday, I was still planning on having like a birthday party. You know what I mean? Like the way that this moved so quickly to now being on like full lockdown. I mean, last time we recorded in person, we had totally planned on continuing
meeting
to
up again
in person. Yeah. So
yeah, you'd mentioned to me like, oh, maybe you could take your microphone next time, but then I ended up picking it up before. But I got to say, I was FaceTiming with my friend Lauren today, who's a big fan of our show. And she said, thank you to both of us for keeping it going. So
yeah, we're trying our best over here. I know it's tough.
We are. All right, everybody, we are going to be talking about the Irish slave myth today. Now, Keegan, this is something that I think both of us were aware of before we started doing this research for this episode. What is your experience with hearing about the Irish slave myth, Keegan?
Okay, so I actually have an anecdote about this, and it's part of the reason why I wanted to do this episode. And I know that we probably should have done this one last week instead of this week, because we really wanted to do it around St. Patrick's Day, because this is something that I feel like comes up every single St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, it really does.
But I remember distinctly having like a full-on argument when I was 18 with this Irish-American man, boy, really, we are both like teenagers, about this subject. And he was adamant to me that the Irish had been slaves in colonial America and that they had been treated far worse than African slaves. And he was using this information. It was very clear to me that he was using this information as a weapon. Like he was weaponizing this information. And there is always this undercurrent when people are talking to you about this of like, well, we had it just as bad as black people and you don't hear us complaining.
Or like worse. Like we had it worse and you don't hear us complaining. Yeah.
Yes,
and that's something that I remember hearing it probably when I was around the same age. I don't think I remember hearing it growing up necessarily, but I feel like I remember hearing it in my late teens, early 20s. And I remember people saying, oh, well, the Irish were slaves too. And the people that told me about it weren't necessarily saying, I don't think that they were treated worse than the African-American slaves. And I think I do remember learning about the Irish indentured servants in college. So I think I did have an understanding that they weren't slaves per se. But I do, you know, ever since I did hear that, I've seen it a lot online. I've seen a lot of people post about it. I hear about it on St. Patrick's Day a lot as well. I think it's something that's really come into popularity again, kind of in the 2010s online.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that a lot.
Yeah. There's a reason why we didn't hear about it as much growing up. It became more popular. So when I was 18, that was probably like around 2008 or so. And that I feel like is kind of when things started ramping up with this myth. We started seeing these memes go around. And of course, that became more and more prevalent and prominent into like the 2010s. I feel like is when things really ramped up.
Yeah. And it's really upsetting to people in Ireland as well, because it is kind of, they do have a history of some rough times, and they really, there are real things that these people went through, and there is a real, you know, tragedy in Irish history. And when we're bringing up this myth, it is also, it's kind of taking away from the actual history of Ireland. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, I want to talk about the history a little bit of sending over the indentured servants and kind of what that means and a little bit of what they did go through during this time, and then go on to speaking a bit about the myths and how damaging it is.
Yes, absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. So it was really during the 17th century where tens of thousands of Irish immigrants were wanting to get out of Ireland. Things were not really going so great in Ireland during this time. The English were also trying to colonize over there. They were not really living great lives. And so they wanted to find new lives for themselves in the new colonies, especially. And right, so and
this was not an unusual thing at all. There were a lot of people, impoverished people in particular, of many different nationalities who decided to emigrate to the United States or to the Americas rather in the 17th and 18th centuries. And a lot of people who were coming over of their own volition, deciding to travel to the United States, they were able to do so because they had means and because they had money. And so if you were looking for a better life or trying to emigrate to the Americas during that time and you didn't have money, there were really very few options.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the most popular options was indentured servitude. You know, they would sign up for this, and that would give them passage to the new colonies. They would be, you know, they didn't have a choice on where they got to go. They would be set up with an employer, with a plantation or wherever they were meant to be working. They really didn't have a say, and they would typically have contracts that would go from about 2 to 7 years. And then once that contract was up, they were free to go. Some were even paid, passage home if they wanted to go home. And they were legally human beings still. They were treated very badly, but they were still legally human beings, where slaves were not legally human beings when they came to the colonies.
Yes. And I do think it is important to point out, because inevitably there will be people who point out that there were some people who were forced into indentured servitude. So,
but
it
those
wasn't-
people were also like prisoners.
Exactly. Yeah. It wasn't entirely necessarily their choice to emigrate to the United States and be an indentured servant, but it was typically either a contract like the one that you just brought up, as in they made a decision to do this thing, or if it wasn't their decision, sometimes it was used as like criminal punishment. They would be sent to the colonies. But again, it was indentured servitude. So unlike institutionalized chattel slavery, indentured servitude was not hereditary and it was not lifelong. Those are some of the big differences between what we saw in the transatlantic slave trade with Africans coming to the Americas, is that they were not considered human beings. They had no legal rights. Their slavery was hereditary, so it was passed on to their children generation after generation, and it was for their entire lives.
Yeah.
Which is not the same thing that you're seeing with indentured servitude. But all that is not to say that indentured servitude was easy or not a difficult way to live, because it absolutely was. And in some instances, it was pretty brutal.
Oh, yes. I mean, and I read a great book called The Orphan Train years ago, and it was about an orphan from Ireland who was transported to Minnesota, actually. And she was an indentured servant, and she was treated horribly. And these stories, they really are very harrowing. And the thing is that we would be telling these stories, I feel like, more often, and it would be more talked about if we didn't have this really ugly myth hanging above it, where we're not trying to compare it to slavery. We're saying this very separate thing happened to these people.
Right. And two terrible things can exist, right?
Yes.
Like both of these things, they're awful. They're horrible. They're not good ways to live. And there were children involved, you know, oftentimes political prisoners or people who had children.
And this was my question, because like you just said, it was political prisoners, there were felons. And then I also saw the word undesirables a lot in my notes. They got rid of any quote undesirables. And I was wondering what that meant.
I don't know.
Do you think it was like things like rumored sexuality? Do you think it was things like, you know, I'm just trying to think of what undesirable would be seen as during this time.
Yeah, I don't know.
Poor people? I don't know.
In my brain, I guess I feel like in the 17th century, it's possible, especially with all of like the political unrest between Ireland and England, that maybe it has something to do with treasonous individuals or people who are trying to stir up.
But that would be like a political prisoner, wouldn't it? I don't know. Well, I just found that interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I don't know. So if any listener knows exactly what that means in a historical context. What an
undesirable is. Yeah.
Yeah. In a historical context, that would be really, really awesome to hear about and find out.
Yeah. So we were just talking about how the treatment really was so horrible. And the thing is that there were no policies for these contracts regulating an employee's control over their employer's control over their employees. So there wasn't anything regulating how an employer is supposed to treat their employee. And that led to a lot of abuse and mistreatment. And if a servant ran away, there would actually be paper, there would be ads in the papers, giving descriptions of the servant that ran away and what they look like and to chase them down. And I read a bunch of them and there was actually a lot where it was like two brothers, you know, 8 and 11, last seen wearing this. And it's interesting because they did have to complete their contract. They would want to run away because they were being treated badly, but they had to finish their contract.
Right. Yeah. And obviously, that's terrible. And yeah, you're exactly right when you say that it makes these things kind of difficult to talk about because you do want to point out that this awful thing happened in history to this group of people. And I do think that very often we forget, especially now in the United States, because we're all immigrants for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
We lump all white people in together because nowadays white people receive white privilege. White people yeah. are just white people, but we forget that there was a point in history when Irish people weren't necessarily considered equals to that of right. other people or Italians. You know, there were yeah. groups of people who we now consider to be white people who were mistreated in the early the days of this country.
But I don't have any sort of generational damage because of that. Like my Irish family was one of the first, was probably in one of these because it was one of the first ships that went over to the colonies.
Mm-hmm.
And we were illiterate. We couldn't read or write or anything like that. So I'm sure that my ancestors came over and were indentured servants, but there's no generational trauma here. Like there's nothing that we are having to cope with as a community. We are not still, being abused and harassed by people because we're Irish. It's a different reality than the African American slaves, because I feel like, you know, we talk a lot with you speak a lot about the generational trauma with African slavery that the Irish don't really deal with.
Right. And there's a very good reason for that. And we've already addressed partially that reason is because it was not hereditary. So it wasn't something that you could pass on to your children. It was like you would serve your time. It would be brutal. But then after that, typically it wouldn't go on. You could go on and kind of create your own life. And in addition to that, you also had certain rights as human beings that Black people did not have. Like when you're yeah. treated as a subhuman, it's a different kind of trauma that's inflicted upon you and your family. So for instance, while a lot was permitted and a lot of very like harsh, brutal, punishments were given for indentured servants, there was mm-hmm. technically legal recourse. Like you could actually file an action against your indentured servant master, whoever that person
yeah.
was,
yeah,
the person
yeah.
Who was your master.
I mean, it would have been hard to fight because of, you know, they're not having real policies against it. But yeah, they did have the right to you know,
right. But for instance,
what's happening to them.
Yeah. For instance, if you killed your indentured servant, you could be tried for murder and you probably would be tried for murder because even though, yes, this is an indentured servant and this is not somebody who is considered as much of a person as maybe yeah. somebody of a higher status, they are considered a human being. And so if you were punishing them and you whipped them too hard and they died, you could be tried for murder in that case. Whereas if you were to kill an African slave, it wouldn't be murder. And in fact, there wouldn't be any punishment really at all outside of, was this your property or not? You know what I mean? Because it would be loss of property, not loss of life. And I think that that's a massive difference. And I think
that is a massive difference.
We have to be careful when using words like slave, because it invokes a certain kind of
It does. But idea. something that I read online was that in Ireland and in some other European countries, it means saying slavery means something different to what used to be the American colonies or to the Caribbean and in that area, because we had multiple different types of, you know, slavery, indentured servitude, servants, things like that. They were saying that sometimes in other countries in literature, they will use the word slavery because it is coerced labor.
Right.
And, but the thing is that exactly what you just said, we have a certain idea of what that word means being in the United States or in Canada and North America. When you say slavery, we immediately think of it as being like the African American slaves.
Right. Well, in truth, the word slavery actually, I mean, it is coerced labor. Anything that is coerced labor can be considered slavery. From ancient Rome, anything that was considered coerced labor, we used the word slavery for. And even into modern day sex trafficking, we still use the word slavery because it is this coerced labor. But the meaning of that has changed. And the only reason why you would use it in the modern day context that we are seeing across social media and in these memes is to undermine the gravity of the transatlantic slave trade. Like, that's what's happening.
Exactly.
It's like no one is trying to erase your hardship or make it seem as though it wasn't as bad as it was. What we're trying to prevent is the erasure of this absolutely horrible thing that happened. And this erasure is happening because people are trying to dismiss their own participation or their ancestors' participation in something
exactly,
as horrific
yeah.
as what happened in the United States.
Yeah, nobody wants to say that their ancestors were slave owners. You know what I mean? That's,
right.
I think that's totally true.
Yeah.
A lot of transports came over to the colonies during the rule of Oliver Cromwell. He sounds like he was a real dick. He was the one that was pretty much kicking everybody out of Ireland. And by 1640, Irish settlers made up of half of the population of the Virginia region. And the travels were really, really rough. On a trip to Barbados once, they lost 23% of the ship to sickness by the time they got to arrival. Okay, so obviously another really big reason for trying to kick everybody out of Ireland was religious persecution. At the time, Irish Catholics were considered inferior because of their religion, and their religion was used to justify treating them poorly. So because they were Catholic, you could treat them poorly.
Which is something that I feel like went on for a really long time.
It went on for a really long time. And it's interesting. I knew somebody who went to a Catholic mission in Ireland a couple years ago. And I remember thinking that was really bizarre. And I spoke to a friend of mine who actually, if they had royalty still in Ireland, she would be a princess technically, which I think is super cool.
I feel like you've talked about her on this podcast
I have, because I think it's super cool. So I asked her about it and she was like, yeah, because like the nation turned Protestant. It's very, very Protestant. So Irish people still to this day are trying to make Catholicism more present in Ireland, which is interesting because Irish Catholics here are crazy. Like they're everywhere.
Right. You know? I feel like most Irish Americans that I know are Irish Catholics. So like Anthony's family is Irish Catholic.
Yep, same.
Your family is Irish Catholic. Like I feel like that's the norm here.
Yeah. And because of that too, like if they were to come over to the American colonies, there was still kind of some like weirdness about it. And especially in Ireland, they were given like special restrictions because they were Catholic. Legislators in Nevis passed an act to prevent Roman Catholics from settling on the island or hold public office in 1701. And authorities in Barbados required the Irish to take an oath of aberration before voting or holding office. So like they really weren't given any sort of like, they weren't like, you can't stay. Like, you can come here and work for us, but like, we don't want you to stay here, you right. Irish Catholics. So of course, we talk about them coming to the American colonies. That's something we know very well. But they also went to Barbados and Leeward Islands. So in Barbados, there was this huge sugar boom going, and they really needed a lot of laborers. So that began the gradual shift where white indentured servants and black slaves started being sent over to Barbados.
And when I hear about the Irish slave myth, very often it's, first of all, it's an almost exclusively American phenomenon. It is mm-hmm. not something that it exists in Ireland or in other parts of Europe, really, which should tell yeah. you a lot.
Should tell you everything.
Everything. It's mostly people in the United States insisting that this was a thing that happened. But when I hear them talking about it, very often they are talking about the colonial United States that yeah. this happened in. And really, a lot of the Irish indentured servants that I saw in my research were ones who went to the Caribbean, Barbados, like those yeah. areas. And that's really where a lot of this brutality took place, like where
yeah.
there was truly a lot of brutality. And I think actually in Barbados and those areas is where a lot of criminals were sent. Is something that like I had read. So yes, I think they same. Justified in treating them even worse than
because the they were criminals
had come over voluntarily and entered into these indentured servant contracts voluntarily.
Precisely. Yeah. And you're right when you say that there were so many people that were sent to Barbados and Leeward Islands. In 1638, there were roughly 2,000 indentured servants and 200 African slaves. 15 years later, there were about 8,000 indentured servants and 1,000 free Irishmen. So we're starting to see where it's tipping.
Yeah. Isn't it strange though that so many like Irish Americans in the United States have used this as a weapon against African Americans when really it's like, if anything, we have a common history that should bind us together more than anything else, because it's like, I mean, it's not the same. Indentured servitude and chattel slavery is not the same, but for a very brief period of time, my people and your people experienced similar hardships.
And they worked together.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing, is they were on the same field. So what's funny enough is that the plantation owners in Barbados and Leeward Islands especially were like, we really hated the indentured servants from Ireland because they were horrible workers. The black slaves were much better workers. And I'm like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. We'd be like, can we get some whiskey, some beer?
Yeah, we're tired.
We want to go to the pub.
They're like, I don't know if you can tell, but I have red hair and very delicate skin. If you could give me
and freckles. And yeah. they would just be getting into fist fights on the fields. Like, that's what I'm picturing when I'm thinking of like my family.
Do you have any sunscreen?
Yeah, like a big hat, you know, things like that. So by 1660, there were about 1,000 more African slaves on the island than there were Europeans. So from 1638 till 1660, so for almost 30 years or so, we're starting to see a shift in indentured servitude becoming less and less, and African slavery becoming more and more. Mm-hmm. So during the initial stages of sugar production, like we said, it was the black slaves and the Irish servants working side by side. But by 1660, the white servants were used for like certain skilled jobs or for supervisory roles. And the black slaves would be doing the hard manual labor. And like you said, the plantation owners in Barbados were especially known to be really, really cruel. And it is said that 10,000 Irish were sent voluntarily and 40,000 came as involuntary indentured servants, like you said, most likely because they are prisoners of some sort and things like that. So yeah, they weren't getting probably the most quality workers in the world, probably a little lazy. So the other, I keep mentioning Leeward Islands, and I don't know if anybody refers to them as Leeward Islands anymore, but it's Antigua Montserrat. Is that how you say it? Montserrat?
I'm not sure.
I'm going to say Montserrat.
That sounds better.
And St. Kitts. I know the other three. I don't know Montserrat. So there they lived materially impoverished lives, but there were also Irish people on Leeward who were of affluent merchant families who had servants of their own. So there were actually people who came there willingly from Ireland who then hired their own servants. So it wasn't like in Barbados where if you were Irish, you were treated badly and you were just an indentured servant.
Right. So I've seen after, so once this started to pick up steam, this myth, so a lot of historians or people who are trying to debunk this myth, they point specifically to about 2014, because 2014 is when the Black Lives Matter movement really started taking off. It was the year of like the deaths in Ferguson, the riots in Ferguson, Freddie Gray, like it was a couple years after Tamir Rice, but it was around this time when the Black Lives Matter movement really started kind of like picking up steam. Yeah. And that is really when we started to see a resurgence of this myth in popular culture on social media. So a lot of historians or people who are trying to debunk this myth, which by the way, are a lot of Irish historians, are the people
I'm going to mention Liam Hogan a lot.
Yes, Liam Hogan is a big one. You can find a lot of interviews with him. He also, I think, wrote maybe like a Medium article as well about this subject. But a lot of these historians, people trying to debunk this myth, specifically Leon Hogan, actually, he specifically pins a 2014 resurgence of the Irish slaves narrative to increasing racial tensions within the United States, which, as we know, 2014 was kind of the rebirth or the birth, actually, mm-hmm. the birth of the Black Lives Matter movement, in large part due to police brutality, instances of police brutality that we saw escalating here in the United States. So that was whenever the unrest in Ferguson was going on, Tamir Rice, Freddie Gray, all of that stuff was kind of coming to a head in 2014. Yeah. And Hogan specifically pinpoints this year as a reason why these memes started kind of like taking off and taking over the internet as a way of white Europeans trying to find a way to, one, absolve themselves of blame for the transatlantic slave trade, and two, to kind of absolve themselves from the lasting effects of that, which would be kind of like the unrest between Black America and police, and the way that Black Americans are treated in this country. So they would make these memes, these absolutely ridiculous memes, which there's a good New York Times article debunking this myth that Madigan actually sent me last week. And that's the kind of the biggest article that I like to keep in my back pocket for whenever people want to try and point to this as a thing that's happened. But you can find a lot of these memes in that article, and they'll debunk why these memes aren't true. And so very often in these memes, what they're doing is they're taking atrocities that happened to Black people during the transatlantic slave trade and trade them out for Irish people. And then they'll also say things like, well, all of this stuff happened to us and you don't see us bitching about it. You don't see us needing to riot in the streets.
Exactly.
And one very specific atrocity that I saw, probably one of the more egregious examples of this, would be the 1781 Zong Massacre. So that massacre, the 1781 Zong Massacre, was an event in which Irish slaves were thrown overboard off of a slave ship, and it was 130 African slaves who were thrown over. And in these memes, and in part of this myth, is they will use the 1781 Zong massacre, but they will substitute out the African slaves that were thrown overboard for Irish people and say that Irish people were the victims of this massacre. And not only will they do that, but they will also increase the number. So it was 130 African slaves that were thrown overboard. But in a lot of these memes and a lot of these texts and a lot of these subreddits, etc., they will say it was 1,300 Irish slaves or Irish people.
Yeah, they added a zero.
Mm-hmm. And InfoWars actually spread this information. Alex Jones of InfoWars spread this information across the internet. And his reach is so insanely long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, there was one meme in particular that got 10,000 shares in just one day. There are some memes that have gotten 200, 3,000 shares. There's ones I've seen on Facebook. The one that I've seen a lot of is like the picture of the child labor.
Which is weird anyway, because it's so clearly a photograph that was taken in the early 20th century.
When who was taking pictures in the 17th century is my question. Exactly. Maybe they're just using it. They could be like, oh, we're using it as representation. But no, they make it look like these are the children. And they are like, you don't see us bitching anymore. Or it's like, I read one that was from the Whisper app, if you remember that one. It was like the anonymous... Why aren't Irish Americans in an outrage? They were the first slaves and were treated worse than African American slaves. Bet most people didn't even know that.
Oh, honey. Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's, yeah.
Look, and again, I just hate this misinformation because should we all be looking at child laborers, children who were having to go into mines in the early 20th century? Should we be looking at that and saying like, yes, this was something awful that we should never repeat again. This never should have happened. Like completely. Yeah. But when you try and use an image from that event to try and push forth this absolute lie, it undermines all of it. It makes all of it like useless. Well,
and a lot of photos of Holocaust victims are used for these as well. And now before the memes were a thing, there were books and articles and texts that were written. And especially when it comes to the use of Holocaust victims, there's a book called They Were White and They Were Slaves, The Untold History of the Enslavement of Whites in Early America, which was self-published by a conspiracy theorist and Holocaust denier by the name of Michael A. Hoffman in 1993. He also blamed the Jews for the African slave trade. So that's fun.
Great.
His book is super racist, and it tries to make it sound like the Irish slaves are treated worse than the African slaves. And this book was really popular with white supremacists, and most of these books are popular with white supremacists even to this day, which is crazy. There was a journalist named Sean O'Callaghan who wrote To Hell or Barbados, The Ethnic Cleansing of Ireland, and his book kind of continued Hoffman's ideas, but he introduced the concept that Irish women were forced to have children with African slaves to produce mixed babies who were seen as more valuable than pure Irish ancestry, which is a lie. If anything, most of the time, Black African slaves, as we've spoken about many times on the show, were being raped by their white plantation owners. It wasn't typically, let's get these white Irish servants to sleep with our Black slaves for mixed children. Like, well, that doesn't make
sense. If it was, if there was any kind of deliberate breeding going on, which I don't put it past anyone that was something that possibly could have happened, but it certainly wasn't because they were trying to increase the value of Irish blood. It wasn't like they thought that if they could mix Irish blood with Black blood, then their blood would be more valuable. If anything, it would devalue them,
right? That's why I was very confused. Like, none of that is making sense to me, because also, like, you know, when we were talking about colorism, we were talking about the lighter slaves being treated better, but that I don't see why a plantation owner would purposefully, you know, that doesn't make, there's nothing in that that makes sense to me, even in a twisted mindset of how they thought back then. I can't see where a plantation owner would employ that.
With indentured servitude not being hereditary, I don't understand what the lasting benefit would be to mixing, because
making more slaves, because they would be a drop of Black, then maybe there would be, but there's no reason why you would have to mix the Irish indentured servants with.
Yes, I don't understand.
To me, that's completely pulled out of his ass.
But again, I mean, this is the thing. If you examine any of these things closely at all, under any kind of microscope, you will see how bullshit it all is. I mean, they use all different kinds of historical documents that also never existed that they point to say as proof of like, this is proof that this happened.
Yeah.
And so many historians have spent so much of their time going through and being like, you will never find this in any history book because it didn't happen.
Well, you and know? That's the thing is, but people say the reason it's not in history books is because people are biased and don't want to share that information. They're like, oh, they're trying to keep this part of history from us. You know what I mean?
That's insane. I don't understand why they would do that in Ireland. To what benefit?
Yeah. Or like, I think they mean in the US. I think they mean that they're not teaching it to us in US textbooks because of that. Well, there is a lot of things that they don't teach us in school. So I can understand why people would say that.
Right.
But in this case, you're not going to find it not just in like your history textbooks, but in any sort of historical text because it just didn't happen.
Right.
And all of the things that you're using as proof are fake.
That's exactly right. For example, the Proclamation of 1625, supposedly requiring all Irish prisoners to be sent overseas, did not exist. You will not find it in any textbooks here or in Ireland because it didn't happen. There was a 1603 proclamation by James I ordering that, quote, rogues, vagabonds, idle and dissolute persons be, quote, banished and conveyed to places and parts beyond the seas.
Yeah.
But one, that's incredibly vague and it says nothing of all Irish prisoners being forced to go and labor overseas.
That's
not what happened. And it was a completely different time and proclamation. It was used later on in the wake of the English Civil Wars as a justification to forcibly ship thousands of Irish prisoners to the Caribbean as indentured servants. So it was used at some point, but it's when you start making up facts that everything else gets muddy. It's like we have to just stick to the facts because the text that they point to, that the one that doesn't really exist, it exaggerates the number of people who were treated in that fashion by quite a lot. So there were thousands that ended up coming over prisoners during the English Civil War from Ireland that they shipped over here to labor, like you said. But these claims that they're making, they're saying that 300,000 Irish people were sent to the Americas, specifically to the Caribbean and Barbados, to be sold as slaves.
Yeah.
Which is simply
not true.
Not true. There is absolutely no proof that that ever happened. And weren't sold as slaves. They were indentured servants.
But these things are perpetuated because of people like Hoffman and this O'Callaghan, because Sean O'Callaghan's writings were repeated again and again on Irish genealogy websites, online essays, and even in a publication for the Scientific America and the Irish Central, which are big Irish news websites. And these articles are being spread all over the place and are actually quite easy to find and common.
Right. And I do think that the Scientific America article, they did come out with a revision where they were like, hey, this information wasn't factual. We know that now. We've made edits to our article. But I mean, unfortunately, the internet is such a blessing and a curse in so many ways because it does allow us to share information and learn new things. But what else it allows for is the spread of this kind of misinformation so that a reputable outlet such as Scientific American can even they can get their wires crossed.
Exactly.
So if you look at that and you see how even smart people are taking these things as fact. And then you think about that idiot on Facebook who's seeing this. We saw this so much in the 2016 election, this spread of fake news, these fake articles, Pizzagate, fucking QAnon, like all of this shit.
Oh yeah. And a lot of these are on Stormfront too, which is like a Trump supporter's favorite website, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's just in the wrong hands.
Yeah.
People are not looking for the truth. They're looking for something that can validate their worldview. And this does that for a lot of people. Yeah.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I mean, that is kind of, I think, the reason that all of this started, because for me, a big thing was I was trying to figure out, I was like, why like, why did this need to start? Why did this need to happen? And, you know, I think a lot of it is a lot of misreading of certain historical texts from other places that maybe did use the word slavery. I think it's also, you know, there's this professor named Brian Fanning who says, widespread acceptance online of false equivalence between chattel slavery and the treatment of Irish migrants appears to be rooted in Irish narratives of victimhood that continue to be articulated within Ireland's culture and political mainstreams. Irish people's history has embraced both a legacy of identification with the oppressed and elements of racism in the service of Irish nationalism. And he also goes on to speak about a lot of what you said, which is in the beginning of this episode, where you feel that it's being used as a weapon to diminish the feelings of the African-American slaves. And it's true that in Ireland, like, that's even, it's hurtful for them. They're like, that wasn't the point of anything. We don't want right. that.
Yeah. You know? And I was going to point that out as well, is that I think it was in our intersectionality episode, we discussed how easy and how much it is actually human nature to relate to or point to the things that make you oppressed, right?
Yes.
Like, it's very easy to point to those things. It's much more difficult to accept the ways in which you are privileged.
Yes.
Like, that's just the truth. It's the way that we operate. We have to consciously make an effort to see the ways in which we are privileged. And I think...
I agree. And I think definitely when it comes to something like slavery, which was so horrible, I think that a lot of people, it's almost like they want to be able to identify because they feel bad.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's almost like you don't want someone to feel like they're the only ones that went through pain. So you're like, and I'm not saying that it's used all the time with slavery, but I'm saying this when I hear, when it's like, oh my gosh, I had kidney stones and it was the worst thing ever. Oh my gosh, I know what it's like. I had gallbladder surgery.
In some ways,
you know,
I
it's that
feel
thing
like,
that people do.
Yeah, they want to relate. I think that that does exist. For me, though, I feel like this particular thing, I think it is more of a, well, look how well we're doing, and we were treated just as badly. So it's you being
exactly.
lazy. It's you not doing enough. It's the black
community. You're not working hard enough to move on, or why are you still talking about this when it's been so long and you don't see us doing the same thing?
Right. And not wanting to accept that not only was chattel slavery in itself something horrific and much worse than even indentured servitude, which was bad enough.
Yeah.
But it also had lasting repercussions that led to Jim Crow, that led to redlining, that led to disenfranchisement of Black Americans, and the reverberations of that continue to this day. And
yeah, exactly.
Not wanting to recognize that or accept that. And it's a way of silencing a whole community, essentially.
Yeah.
I really think that that's what it is. And I also think it is simultaneously needing to participate in this kind of victimhood because I don't know what makes them special. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, you know? I don't know. Yeah, I think as weird as it sounds, I think a lot of times it is to make them feel special. I think it is to, because people want to be special, and unfortunately we do praise people who have gone through tragedy and things like that. So I can see why if somebody did want to feel just as special, maybe coming out of Black History Month and going into St. Patrick's Day, oh, look, my ancestors went through something horrible as well. That doesn't seem like such a far stretch for me, for people.
Right. Yeah. I think that that's probably a big part of it, is just that needing to have suffered, because I think in our society, especially even with people who are privileged, we try and find ways in which they're like, oh, they picked themselves up, they did it themselves, and like all of this stuff. We
pick
admire
them up by their bootstraps.
Yeah, we admire that so much in American culture and society that I feel like the more people can ingrain that or weave that into their story, it somehow makes them like stronger or better. And I'm not saying
makes them more interesting.
Yes. And I'm not saying that that's not true, because I do think, look, I think being able to point to your culture and like see the things that maybe had like disenfranchised your people that you have managed to rise out of.
Yeah.
Like, I love those t-shirts that like are very popular with Black people that say, "I'm my ancestors' greatest dream" or whatever.
Oh, I love that.
Because it is, it, there is something about like your people managed to endure all
so
of these
much.
Hardships for you to be able to have this life. And you should be able to acknowledge that and celebrate that. Like, that's wonderful, but don't do it at the expense of another culture or another group of people, or don't devalue like the things that they went through in order to build yourself up. It's not necessary. It's not the oppression Olympics.
Exactly. But a lot of people treat it as such.
Yeah.
I completely agree. What we said at the beginning is that both tragedies can simultaneously happen, and one can be seen as something completely different than the other, because that's the whole point, is that chattel slavery and indentured servitude was completely different. So next time you hear somebody saying that it was the same or that the Irish went through something worse, now everybody has the information, and we can point to historical inaccuracies that people are trying to make true to argue our point, you know?
And you can have an intelligent conversation about it that doesn't devalue either experience.
Like, exactly.
Liam Hogan said, "This continued misuse of Irish history devalues the real history. There are libraries filled with all the bad things that actually did happen. We don't need memes and these dodgy articles full of lies." It's like,
exactly.
And I think that's just putting it the best way that it could be put, where it's just like,
we had real tragedy. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. There's real tragedy.
We don't need to make up. We don't need to make up new tragedy. Bad shit already happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Whew. Well, this was a really fun one for me again to research, particularly coming from Ireland and having this be a lot about around the time that the Haggertys came over to the U.S. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Especially around St. Patrick's Day.
I definitely wanted to hear your take on it, being like an Irish American, and like you've never heard anything, or
I have never had a family member say anything to me. That's never been part of my history.
You know what's weird,
anyway,
is like, I feel like people who have strong connections with their Irish roots, like Anthony's family, he's only a couple of generations in. His grandparents, I think, came over from Ireland.
Yeah.
And I don't see this being a topic of conversation in their family.
It could be especially because they came over more recently. You said it was
that's true.
Parents that came. That's probably why, because they have more of an authentic Irish experience, where my family has been here for so long that we are very much Irish American. So our understanding of our history probably would have been closer to that of what we were talking about today. But I'm just saying, I never heard anything like that growing up from my family.
Yeah.
You know, I just knew them as drinkers and fighters and loud. That's it.
Fun.
Yeah, they're pretty fun. They're pretty crazy. They're a good time on a vacation, you know?
That's right. I love hanging out. Anthony is half Irish, half Filipino, and they're both partiers, groups of people. It's fun.
Oh, yeah. Irish parties are crazy. I was born a little too late to experience more of the true Irish parties of my family, but my mom said that when she was dating my dad, they went to a funeral, and there was a full-on brawl, like fist fights. Blood. It was crazy.
The fighting aspect of it, I'm not sure I'm entirely on board with. But
they get really drunk.
Good times.
Yeah, I think the Haggertys just aren't very good drunks. I think that's one takeaway. Except for me, I don't have any problems with alcohol. I think I'm one of the only non-alcoholics in my family line, which is great.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Very proud of myself. All right, everybody. I want to know what you all thought of this, what your experience is. Has anybody ever said anything to you? If you are a Black American, what is your experience with all of this? Has anyone come at you and asked you or told you about, you know, the Irish slaves or anything like that? We want to hear your response to this episode. So email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or direct message us on our Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminists. You can follow us there. We also have a Facebook business and group page. You can go ahead and rate and review us on that business page and chat with our fellow ragers in the group page. We need that extra support right now during these times, and that is a great place for you to go. Let's see. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate it. And it's been a while. you have nothing to do. Get that phone out right now and give us a 5-star, right? And just a quick sentence and you will be featured on Reviews Day Tuesday. It's simple, it's easy, and it makes us really happy. Also, if you don't already, go ahead and listen to us on Radio Public. It's a free way for you to listen and it helps us out just a little tiny, teeny, tiny bit. All right. That's all that we have for you today. With all of that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye.